You're listening to American Songcatcher, tracing the roots of American music from its cultured past to today's artists playing it forward. I'm folk musician Nicholas Edward Williams. Today, we proudly present something a little different on American Songcatcher. Instead of the usual documentary-style podcast piece, this is a compilation of field recordings that I did in Buncombe and Madison counties, just outside of Asheville, North Carolina, last year. Considered the mecca of long-held traditions in ballad singing and old-time mountain music, this area is also home to the minstrel of the Appalachians, one of the most important yet lesser-known figures in folk and old-time music, Bascom Lamar Lunsford, who was born on this day, 142 years ago. I was fortunate enough to visit North Carolina several times, to visit Bascom's old home, perform at the annual Lunsford Festival, and witness the return of filmmaker David Hoffman, who first filmed Bascom in 1964, and was coming back to visit the area for the first time in nearly 60 years. This is a story about a living tradition. In April of 2023, I was invited to Bascom Lamar Lunsford's old home in Buncombe County, North Carolina, in the town of Lester, to meet with its current owner, Whitney Ponder, and her dog, Luna May.
Now just calm down. We're all here. We see you. We're happy for you, but you need to be quiet.
This is so cool. I'm so glad that we got it together on this.
Me too.
Sound check.
Yep.
1, 2.
That's right.
Whitney grew up here, and everyone in the area knew Bascom. But before we sat down to talk, I had to check one off the bucket list and play a few traditional tunes on the porch of, quote, the house the five-string banjo built.
Hey, good morning.
Wow, I almost wore that same shirt today.
Did you?
Yeah.
She's barking at my dog, who's very friendly. Is your pup friendly?
I asked my friends Mark Kalansky and Amy Alvey, who perform as an old-time duo called Golden Shoals, to come play a few tunes with me, especially since we were already on tour in North Carolina.
If it's easier and quieter, I can put Cecil in the band.
I also invited my good friend Justin Forrest to help with some videography.
You guys just yell at me if I'm in your way.
Okay.
And I'd like a good yell, too.
And unsolicited chuckles.
Cool. I was going to say, how the hell does a gal from Nashville and a guy from Vancouver end up on a porch in Lester?
Yeah, it's a new thing.
For decades, Bascom's home was a sacred ground for regional musicians to learn and perform different types of Appalachian dance, share and swap tunes on the porch, or rest up from their travels or performances in Asheville.
Getting the feel for the neighborhood.
We decided on two songs that Bascom was the first to record during the 1920s. Both of which were also included on the iconic compilation record from 1952, The Anthology of American Folk Music, an old folk song called I Wish I Was a Mole in the Ground, and a gospel tune called Dry Bones.
When Paul prayed in that prison cell, I saw the light from heaven shining all around. I saw the light come shining, I saw that light come down. When Moses saw that burning bush, he walked around and round, and the Lord said, I saw the light from heaven shining all around. I saw the light come shining, I saw that light come down.
Cool. I think we got it.
I think we got it for sure.
Afterward, I walked around the house with Whitney. She talked about why Bascom was so important to the local culture.
Well, now Bascom was quite eccentric, and he wore a lot of different hats. But he had a passion and a love of traditional Appalachian music, ballads. And when he was a traveling fruit tree salesman on horseback, that gave him the opportunity to go visit all these people out in these remote hollers, as they would say, in mountain towns. And he would get them to play music with him. And he remembered all of those ballads. I think he recorded over 300 songs from memory for the Library of Congress. Mm-hmm. They used to have a festival in downtown Asheville called the Rhododendron Festival. One year they asked him if he would bring some of his musicians there, and they stole the show. Mm-hmm. And then he founded the Mountain Folk and Dance Festival, which is the longest running festival of its kind in the country. And it's still going today.
Yeah.
She told me about growing up in this area and her connection to Bascom.
And the fact that my mom performed at Bascom's youth competitions and his mountain dance and folk festival when she was a young girl, that kind of had a connection there for me. I grew up hearing about Bascom from her and my grandmother. And he was born on the campus of what is now Mars Hill University in Madison County. And they have a huge archival collection of his scrapbooks, memorabilia, some of his musical instruments. And we were getting ready to leave. I had one of my board members with me, and I said, "Wait, Drew, there's one more scrapbook that we didn't look at." And I started thumbing through it, and I found the picture of my mom when she was a young girl performing on stage in a newspaper clipping that Bascom had cut out.
Wow.
It brought tears to my eyes, and yeah. I wish she and my grandmother were still alive, because I grew up hearing about Bascom from them. Mm. And I don't know, it's almost like the way it all came together, it was meant to be.
I asked about the history of the house. Why here?
Bascom built this house in 1938, and they had a lot more land at that time. His first wife, Nellie Triplett, her family owned, I think, over 300 and something acres in this valley. They used to own the land that's across the street here, and it was just a pasture at the time, and they had a big stage up there where they would all get together and play music and flatfoot dance and clog dance.
Wow.
I know that he and Nellie raised six kids in this house, which, you know, with three bedrooms, that's a lot of children. And the windows that are in the house, a lot of the windows were, I was told that Bascom took a buckboard wagon down to Asheville and collected all these windows from an old historic hotel that was being torn down.
And I had to know about the famous living room that held countless traditional dance and musical gatherings from 1938 until the late 1960s.
So just tell me a little bit about the room we're standing in.
Okay, this room was specifically designed by Bascom Lamar Lunsford for music gatherings and traditional clog and flatfoot dancing.
Okay. And is this the original hardwood floor?
Yes, as far as I know it is. They have been refinished, but these are the original hardwood floors. And that is the iconic original fireplace.
Whitney also told me the heartwarming story of how she bought this house. After Bascom suffered a stroke in 1965, he and his wife Frida moved to Asheville to be closer to the healthcare facilities. His home was left unkempt, clear through his passing in 1973, boarded up and vandalized, nearly to the point of dilapidation. It was then sold out of the family to a friend of Bascom's named Bobby Robinson.
And he literally saved it and gave it the late 60s, early 70s makeover.
Wow. How long was it left between Bascom and Bobby taking over?
I'm not exactly sure, but probably close to 15 or 20 years.
Wow.
After Bobby's passing in 2014, the house sat again for years, both with he and Bascom's belongings inside, until it was placed on the market around 2021. And Whitney had been looking to move from downtown Asheville back to her country roots. And while she was on Zillow one night, Bascom's house popped on the screen.
And it was 10:30 at night, but I still
texted my realtor, and I thought, well, if he doesn't see it tonight, he'll get it in the morning. And I said, I want to see this as soon as possible. So I think it was either the next day or the day after that, we all met out here and to look at it. And I don't know how to even explain it, but the minute I walked through that front door, I knew this was it. Yeah.
Whitney immediately was overcome by the importance of preserving it, Bascom's life's work, and his legacy for future generations. But it was out of her price range.
Well, he texted me the following day and said that the owners were asking for highest and best offers by 5 o'clock. And I said, well, I guess I'm going to have to miss out because I'm not sure I'm ready to make that leap yet. And the next morning, I think it was my birthday or the day after, I was sitting on my back porch at the little place I'm at in Woodfin, and I was kind of kicking myself in the butt for not at least submitting an offer. So I texted my realtor, even though it was a day past the deadline, I said, is it too late? And he said, let me check. And he said, well, they haven't cut it off yet. And I said, well, draw up the offer, but do not send it until you get my email because I want my personal letter. So I wrote a personal letter to the sellers explaining who I was and that I, you know, wasn't going to tear the house down. I wanted to restore it and submitted my offer. And I was kind of a nervous wreck, but I think in a couple of days, my realtor called me and he said, they accepted your offer.
Because of that letter, she was able to acquire the house. Whitney started the nonprofit soon after, knowing that it would take more hands on deck to get the house into ideal shape and be a resource.
And I just feel very honored and privileged to be the next steward of this amazing property.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have, like I said, I've formed the Pondering Bascom Performing Arts and Education Center nonprofit, and I've put my entire life savings and everything I have into this house, and there's still work to be done, but I'm not giving up. And I've also been in touch with the Asheville Buncombe Preservation Society, and we are talking about getting an easement in place so the house can never be torn down. Mm. And my goal is to eventually host some artistic and music workshops out here, maybe have some small intimate music gatherings, have some folks that, like yourself, that record music come out here and make a video out here at Bascom's house.
Yeah.
I wish I was a mole on the ground. Wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I could root that mountain down. I wish I was a mole on the ground. Emmy wants a $9 shot. Emmy wants a $9 shot. I come up on the hill with my $10 bill, saying, baby, we've been so long.
If I'd visit in the spring, I'd hear my darling sing, and I wish I was a lizard in the spring.
I came back to the area 5 months later, in September, as I was scheduled to perform at the annual Lunsford Festival. Coincidentally, there was going to be a screening of the first film that introduced America to mountain and old-time music, also the first documentary by filmmaker David Hoffman, called Music Makers of the Blue Ridge, from 1965.
Now that type of dancing, of course, not done as possibly skillfully as he's done that, but the dancing, knocking out the tune to the feet, going all the way through the square dance, makes our mountain traditional dancing very attractive from the standpoint of entertainment.
Bascom, who was 82 at the time, is featured prominently as David's guide. The camera lens traverses around Buncombe and Madison County to present its riches, and there are some incredible clips that some of you have likely seen on YouTube, one of which has over 2 million views, featuring a local fiddler named Lost John.
Now, gentlemen, I'm going to take you to the home of a fiddler called Lost John, a native of Wilkes County. His real name is Jesse Ray. We're going down to Ray Lunsford.
She don't play none, John.
I know. She don't want to get to playing more than she does.
Sure, yeah. First up, the song starts out.
Twinkle,
twinkle, twinkle, little star.
Another clip is actually from Bascom's house, in his legendary living room, with a group of young teens performing a traditional dance, all of whom learned through Bascom's dance programs. The film was broadcasted on public television under the title Bluegrass Roots, and it was a hit. After a lifetime of passion and pursuit to change the narrative and stereotyping of mountain culture and old-time music, and striving to give his people a sense of pride, Bascom's role in the film would be his triumphant last effort before he passed.
Bascom is an ambassador for the city, and, like, you know, it was very upfront about those things.
Yeah.
And he, I mean, the festival changed the form of the music.
This is Brandon Johnson, who works for the Department of Madison County Tourism, and is also a historian and musician, who you're going to hear more from later.
And like, the clogging in the video, like, mixing the clogging step with the circle partnerships and forms of the square dance, that was the thing that pissed a lot of people off.
Yeah.
And that was part of the competitions from the festival. And, you know, there's constant innovation in dance, and, like, competition does that.
Yeah.
David, I think, mentioned, you know, that, like, skill and quality was not a prerequisite for being part of that video. Like, he took him to see people who played.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important too.
As a bonus, David Hoffman was going to be there in person for the screening, his first time back in town since filming nearly 60 years ago, to give an introduction, answer questions, and soak up the mountain culture. The morning before the screening, however, I scheduled an appointment at Mars Hill University, home to nearly all of Bascom's remaining possessions, known as Lunsford's Memory Collection.
Hey. Yeah.
Hi, Leela.
First, I ran into program director Leela Weinstein, who also booked me for the Lunsford Festival. But I was there to meet with the director of the Southern Appalachia Archives.
I'm Karen Parr. I'm the director of the Southern Appalachian Archives at Mars Hill University and also the university archivist. I've been here since March of 2008.
Karen was kind enough to set out a list of items that I selected that belong to Bascom and are being preserved there. Most notably, his instruments.
Yes, this is Bascom Lamar Lunsford's mandolin banjo cross instrument that he, I think it was fairly unique to him. And you definitely see it in some of the images that we have. Yes, this is what he called his D-horned fiddle. It has what some have called a Stradivarius shape with the rounded corners. And, of course, he's playing on the notion that the fiddle was the devil's instrument and because of its link with dancing and everything. And so he enjoyed playing that. And there's some very early photographs of this fiddle. And this instrument, I don't know that he ever played, but it's a handmade banjo. And it says, made in Washington, D.C., made by someone who heard about a banjo but never saw one. So, not a ringing endorsement, but he did hold on to it for a long time. So.
There was a giant scrapbook that, when closed up, was probably 3 feet tall by 2 feet wide, including notes and documents of correspondence, ribbons for contests, newspaper clippings, and loads of photos with handwritten captions by Bascom.
Yes, this is really the star of our collection, and really the greatest document of Bascom Lamar Lunsford's very long life and career. he has this big scrapbook that was over 400 pages. Apparently, his daughters pasted the items into it, and then he wrote all the little captions in there. And yes, these are from his Mountain Dance and Folk Festival. As far as I know, the longest continuing folk festival in the United States. And it started in Asheville about 1928. And these are some of his real stars who were in the festival for many years. Fiddler Marcus Martin, Bill McElreath, and on the guitar, and then Samantha Bumgarner, who I believe was one of the first women to be recorded playing the banjo.
There were also train tickets and business documents from the many jobs that he held in his life, including being a lawyer, teacher, and honey salesman.
Yeah, train passes, looks like Jacksonville to Nashville.
The card I used when special agent for Department of Justice. Yeah, he also had a very wide-ranging and interesting career, raising bees for a while. He certainly taught. A lot of people in his family were teachers. He went to law school and had some political career as well.
Again, remind you that I am an independent candidate for the lower house, and at our next election, I expect to represent this district in Congress.
There was an unpublished manuscript.
It's really a textbook about folk song figures and calls. It looks like a book. I mean, it is typed on a typewriter, but he'll give the calls for a certain dance and with directions to the dancers, and then he has photographs that illustrate all the figures that he's talking about in the text. So it's really just like a published book, except it's one of a kind. And we have scanned that and put that online, too.
And fascinating letters, like this one, about the person who purchased Bascom's famous song, Mountain Dew, from him, reportedly for a train ticket home, equaling $25, that Bascom didn't have at the time.
But this is an interesting one, because it's what I think might be the first contact that he had with Scott Wiseman, who wrote him. Someone has told me that you've collected quite a number of ballads and songs for our mountain people. And he said, I'm especially interested in mountain songs, and they're going good over the radio. So Scott Wiseman is, with his wife, Lulabelle, they purchased the rights to Bascom Lamar Lunsford's Mountain Dew song, although they did wind up sharing them back with him. So
he did get some royalties?
Yeah, he did. Mm-hmm. They advertised the soft drink Mountain Dew when I was growing up with that, but
it's just amazing. I mean,
to review. Yes, they call it that old Mountain Dew, and those who refuse it are few. While I know I've done wrong, their temptation is strong when they call for that old Mountain Dew.
This film before you see it, because I think it's important. Okay, so I'm headed down to North Carolina, 1965, 49-pound camera, 26-pound audio recorder, big microphone, and boom, and I'm going to make this film on Bascom Lamar Lunsford. He's 82 years old, and he had an article in Time magazine, which I saw, which said that he was running this festival down in Asheville, North Carolina, for mountain music, dancers, singers, storytellers. It sounded great. So I wrote him. And I said, look, I'm a documentary filmmaker. I'd actually never made a film like this. I'd like to come and spend time with you. And he said, sure, Dave, come on down. You ever been to North Carolina? He said in the letter. I said, nope, never been anywhere really but the Northeast where I come from. And he also said he was searching for people for his music festival. Very important, because I said, well, I'll hit the road with you, sit in the back of the car, take me around and show me. And what I saw was unbelievable.
And that night, I learned that there were mixed feelings about David from the locals. Mostly confusion on why, after the film received so much success, he didn't come back and have a proper showing, or even make an appearance after all those years. But here we all were, in Hot Springs, North Carolina, at Chestnut Hall in September of 2023, about to watch it together. I walked up the entrance steps, and there on the stoop was David in conversation with a local banjoist named Troy Harrison.
Speaking of bad things happening to people, I found out I am descended from the brother of William Wallace.
Get out of here.
So is Bascom.
Is he really?
You see it in my film.
Yes.
The discussion stuff, and it points to William Wallace.
Okay.
The entire evening was organized by Rare Bird Farm in the Madison County of Tourism. About 30 people showed up for the screening, one of which jumped right off the Appalachian Trail, which goes right through town. Brandon Johnson, the musician and historian working for Madison County, who you heard from earlier, was the host and MC for the event.
Thank you all for being here. I was very privileged and honored to have a conversation just before everybody got here, actually on the steps, about how traditions live on, what preservation means, why it's important to do those things. And for me, the essence of that is because these things connect you to other people and they help you have fun and enjoy something.
Then came an introduction from David, which was not unlike his YouTube videos.
And that they gave me credit for when PBS NET, before PBS saw it, they said, hey, Alfie, you really got the character. And I did, because of that audio. So that's the trip you're watching. It's him, me on a mountain, and him saying, come on, David, we're going to do this, slam the door, and off we go.
Then, the film.
Good to see you.
Now you're in for seeing some good country, because I'm going to show you a lot of this territory where our friends live and where they know the old ballads and know about our mountain dancing. All the meat's in the cupboard and the light's in the chair. The meat's in the cupboard and the light's in the chair. And if that ain't a grandpa, that'll be dirt and grandpa.
The fellow that I first heard sing that, he didn't sing it, he chanted it. He was real old. And in the place of saying groundhog, he said whistle pig. And he just chanted, just talked it, you know. And at the end, he'd say groundhog whistle pig.
Sing upon a lady. Well, you sing your partner. Now on to the next one. Have a look, four and a half way round. That's it.
She's down. She's from down at Logan, West Virginia, and she was the midwife for Devil Ann Hatfield's babies.
I see.
And she taught me a song called The Prodigal Son, and I've always wondered if The Prodigal Son was a hymn tune or if it was a frolic tune. She said it was a hymn tune, but I want you to hear it.
My grip is packed for travel, and I'm scratching gravel to that Blue Ridge far away. I know the day that I return, there'll be a shindig in the barn. The folks from Rouseron will come. There'll be some fiddlers in the storm. I got the Blue Ridge Mountain blues, and I stand right up and say, my grip is pegged for travel, and I'm scratching gravel for that Blue Ridge far away.
Thank you, David, and thank you definitely to Railroad Farm and everybody there for bringing us here. And thank you all for being here.
Following the screening was a Q&A with Brandon that was also open to the public.
Yes, I was wondering, after the film was made, was there any like special occasion where it was shown to people locally, and what was the reaction?
No, and that's a terrible mistake that was made by young documentary filmmakers like me. But I didn't do it. I went on to my next gig. Young filmmaker. Dumb. Would have been wonderful to come back here and show it to the people. I think they would have been blown away. There are people who, you'll see it on the YouTube, my YouTube channel, people saying, I am the second cousin removed by one from that person. The only thing we have is that piece of film. They're very touched by it.
Afterward, as people started leaving, I asked some of the attendees what they thought.
I saw this film about 5 years ago, sitting on a porch above Charlottesville, Virginia. We already knew we were going to be coming down to live in this area, and it just blew me away. I mean, it seemed so authentic, and it seemed like a culture that was really appealing and that I wanted to learn more about, and it was because of that film. It was just
so I thought the film was a wonderful look into the past of old good porch times, and I think it's always neat seeing stuff from that time period, and you don't get to see it often, so thought it was a well put together piece of history.
I loved watching the film, and I mostly was touched on the natural scenery not being all that different than it is now.
We had some refreshments next door. After snacks, the people left over were mostly locals and those involved in organizing, and we poured out into the street. Some folks reconnected without realizing it.
Who are you? You're on
the option.
Troy Harrison.
Troy! Now
you can see his face and he looks like his daddy.
Son, you grown.
I did.
She said, son, you grown.
He played that banjo because of me. This is what he done. He rode my bus and he'd bring that banjo. He'd play and I'd sing.
Aww.
And there I was, a witness to this local culture.
That's one and all eternal. That's my home, baby. That's my home.
If you didn't know it, American Songcatcher is a completely independent educational program. In order to provide these stories and keep creating shows, we rely on your support as listeners. So please, consider making a tax-exempt donation or contribute monthly with our Patreon community. To share your support, please visit the links in the show notes. Now, back to the show.
Drinking of the wine, wine, wine. Drinking of the wine, holy wine. You ought to have been there 4,000 years, drinking of the wine. Drink it, member, drink it free.
You are an assistant.
The day after the film screening was the annual Lunsford Festival, a free day-long event which has been held at Mars Hill University since 1968. There's a wide range of activities, with stages, tents, and jams set up across campus. Groups of all ages can be seen performing traditional dances, singing ballads, and old-time and bluegrass, both on and off stage. I immediately noticed a huge presence of young people performing and attending, many of whom were carrying the oral tradition that passed through this area hundreds of years ago, and just as their predecessors did, expanding the sound in their own likeness. Groups like the ETSU Old Time Ramblers. Off the stage, there were jams and song circles formed among friends and strangers, some folks practicing on their own, and multi-generational family string bands. I was the black sheep. Not only was I the only non-local on the bill, I was also the only one carrying around a microphone, and later playing an assortment of Piedmont blues, ragtime, and old-time guitar, all styles that are not from this area. Nonetheless, I was welcomed.
But you did awesome. I like how you made things your own. You're not copying somebody. You're embracing it and letting it be yours. Yeah. But that's very refreshing. You know, you're being you. And you play really, really well.
I asked some folks there about the local culture.
I never did tell anybody I like string music or, you know, bluegrass or that country stuff. And then these guys came from, they were from West Virginia, and they had a job with the Library of Congress collecting music. And they came to Sodom and met with Dellie Norton. And Dellie was so tickled to see somebody from somewhere else. She just welcomed everybody in, you know. Well, the rest of us were a little standoffish, you know. And was afraid they was coming to steal our accent.
And I got extra stories, true to Southern hospitality.
I was a paramedic for 30 years before that. And I never had a back injury, you know, a lot of holes and stuff. I could tell the older I got, it's like the harder it was when I come home. My back would just be like, you know, 2,000 miles for a weekend. It's just like, oh, I can't walk.
Too many horns on the locomotive without earplugs. You know, the later years they required you to wear earplugs.
I believe it.
Unless you had all the windows closed and everything, you'd take them out.
His family were on the stage when the shooting started.
Oh my God.
And he had brought a box of kittens to give away. Well, hell. And all that commotion, those cats jumped out of that box, and I don't know if they ever found them or not.
But one of the main events to see at the annual Lunsford Festival is the ballad swap.
They just keep coming, y'all. This is, y'all don't understand how exciting this is for us, because there were literally so few of us just a few years ago, and now it's like, yeah.
Ballads are unique. Typically sung a cappella, they tell a story or narrative poem with melodies that have been passed down over hundreds of years. These were songs sung during the hardest of times, during migration and settlement, to not only pass the time and raise morale, but it brought people together. Madison County is particularly known for its rich history of ballads and ballad singers, and some of the dozen or so folks that performed that day were 6th, 7th, and 8th generation singers. One of them is Donna Rae Norton, who also hosted the event. This is a clip of her from a short documentary that was being made the same weekend by Tim Dugan in collaboration with Rare Bird Farm and Madison County Tourism, called Madison County, North Carolina, where music history is alive.
I have many well-known ballad singers and musicians in my family, And so for me, this is about keeping my family's tradition alive, and it's something that I'll continue to do until I literally cannot sing anymore, until I have no voice left in my body. I lost my mom in 2021, and my dad passed away when I was 2 years old. And so, you know, just this is like the last thing that I have left of them, you know, and my family, because I don't have any grandparents or most of my aunts and uncles. I have one aunt living still. I didn't inherit any land or house or any money or anything like that. This is my heritage. This is my inheritance.
So he's going to sing The Sailor Boy, and he got this from the singing of Dillard Chandler, who was a wonderful voice. And if you ever listen,
though there are incredible singers, it's also unique because it's not about a performance or having perfect pitch or tone. It's about expression, emotion, history, lineage. Each person tells a little bit about how they came to know the song.
So both of those were recorded in the early 60s, and this is one of Dillard's songs, and my daddy Peter is going to sing this for you. Can you pitch it high enough so you don't end up in your boots, okay?
It's a sailor being tired, really hung down his head. It's a sailor being tired.
The stories are as varied as the voices. Love and loss is a regular theme.
Down in the willow garden, where me and my love did meet, there we sat a cord and my love fell off to sleep.
Songs of Outlaws.
They call me Renner Dine. They call me Renner Dine. They call me Renner Dine. 'Tis written ancient history. They call me Renner Dine.
And of course, murder ballads.
Led her across the hall. He took out his sword and he cut off her head and he kicked it against the wall. Wall and he kicked it against the wall. Go dig me a grave, both wide and deep, to bury these two in. Just kick little Matthew Groves over the side, but lure my sweet wife in. And I said, lure my sweet wife in.
Cider blackjack, baby.
Let's dance, just like they used to do it. Just so we'll all help you move our chairs and just stack them up over there.
Nested in a holler between Lester and Hot Springs, North Carolina, lies Rare Bird Farm, ran by a group of three friends from Charleston, South Carolina. As I said earlier, they organized and sponsored David Hoffman's trip back to the mountains and the screening. And the day after the festival, they hosted a celebration and a concert featuring myself.
God, I'm one.
And an old-time duo called The Harrows, led by Hazel Ketchum and Bob Carver, based out of Brevard, North Carolina.
Well, shoulder up your gun and whistle up your dog. Shoulder up your gun and whistle up your dog. You're off to the woods to get a groundhog. Oh, groundhog. Well, yonder comes out.
I had just met Hazel and Bob the night before, jamming late into the night, which personally is my favorite way to meet musicians. The concert ended with the three of us playing old-time songs for a traditional mountain square dance, and everybody was up on their feet, finding a partner.
This is a mixer, so the idea is you're going to get to know everybody in the room. And, yeah, so let's start. We're going to start with our big circle. obsessed. You're a partner in circle. I might have you do some of these moves. We're going to do the swing with our partner, and we'll do the do-si-do with the neighbor. And then we'll be back to swing promenade with our partner. So a lot of these dance moves, of course, are really old. They date all the way back to the Renaissance, when they used to do a type of dancing called English country dancing. Circle left. Go ahead.
Also in attendance was one of Bascom's grandsons, Ed Heron.
My mother was Josepha Bell Lunsford. That's Bascom Lamar Lunsford's youngest child. My granddaddy, he was just a ball of fire. He really accomplished a lot in his life. But granddaddy came along right at that magical point of time, right before Rhodes and right before radios. And that's when he learned this music. He learned it from his mother. He learned it from his grandmother. The music is all nice and it's catchy, but he saw the effect that it had on his fellow mountaineers. And then he saw a change. The roads are coming, the radio's coming. All of a sudden, people wanted to hide this traditional music. It was backwards. The new people they met in town made fun of it. It was getting pushed away. He knew the only way to save it was to let the natives know how powerful this music was. Granddaddy saw me. He saw it coming.
He also called a few dances.
I'll go left. Granddaddy, he knew the power that it had on the fabric of society.
Afterward, I wanted to talk to Tim Dugan, who at this point was done filming for his documentary, and to see what he thought about this weekend as an outsider from Nashville, looking in, not having much knowledge about Bascom or mountain culture.
So my question is, like, why this? What's the point, really, from a kind of cynical standpoint? Especially being not particularly attached to this music myself or the other aspects of the culture, to buck dancing, what have you. But as I've asked people, it's been very clear that the music is almost a side effect of an idea, or maybe it's the other way around, of connecting people. That's the point that I've gotten, that Bascom probably cared about. I don't know. but at least the people now deeply care about, that they want to have connections between each other as a community, between their family members, and between the existing and the ancestors. And they're doing it. It's working.
What stuck out to me from these trips to North Carolina wasn't what I expected, and I thought I would find some culmination of lineage that traces directly back to him. But instead, it's more subtle and more beautiful than that. It's a living tradition, steady as a stream. The legacy that Bascom infused in the mountain people has continued slowly, not with some headline-worthy, in-your-face climax. I was both witnessing this living tradition, and I'm also a part of its ripple effect. Bascom was a link, a vital one at that, in the long chain of history behind American roots music. And the living tradition is in the young people who still perform this music.
Yeah. Then you can go a little crazy on the second.
Okay, you're right. Yeah. Okay, I'll keep it rolling.
Keep cooling them for like the first half.
Okay, okay.
Then,
yeah. I don't know
if that's a problem. Okay. Turn to believe and learn. Turn to believe and learn.
It's found in the bow of a fiddle. It's in the smiles and laughter of mountain square dancing. It's in the words of locals like Whitney Ponder.
Y'all come back now, you hear?
My grandma always used to say that, and I guess Bascom did too.
I don't doubt it.
And it's in the songs that Bascom Lamar Lunsford recorded, forever preserved and recognized for its importance and role in shaping American music.
Going down the street the other day, and I heard the report of a pistol. And I says, what does that mean? A friend of mine looked up excited and gave me something sort of like this. Oh, they tell me Mr. Garfield is shot on the lee and mighty low, mighty low. Oh, they tell me Mr. Garfield is shot. I saw a big crowd of people gathered up over there. I went across, went in, saw Mr. Garfield lying on the bed. And I says, how you feeling? He looked up rather sad-like. Give me something sort of like this. Oh, I'm shot down very low, down low. I'm shot down very low. Said, better send for a preacher. Send for the preacher. Preacher come in, walked over the bedside. Said, Mr. Garfield, if you should die tonight, when do you think you'd spend eternity?
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16.
And that's all for episode 4 of season 3. Whitney Ponder and the nonprofit that are restoring Bascom's old house have a GoFundMe. Find the link to that in the show notes. And there's also links to see both films mentioned in this episode. Also, a huge thanks to Rare Bird Farm for sponsoring this episode. You can find links to all the folks that were a part of this in the show notes. Thank you so much to the community on Patreon for your continued support of this independent program. To join the team or send a one-time donation, find the links in the show notes. Our intro song is Payday by Mississippi John Hurt from the Today album. Our outro song is 16 Tons, performed by Tennessee Ernie Ford, originally written by Merle Travis. This episode was produced, written, edited, recorded, and distributed by myself, Nicholas Edward Williams. In the words of Bascom Lamar Lunsford, I've spent nights in more homes from Harper's Ferry to Iron Mountain than anybody but God. Here's to the songs of old. May they live on forever. See you next time on American Songcatcher.
What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.